They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax. Joining us today, we have Deborah Goonan. Debbie is one of the people who worked very hard on that survey, and she's going to tell us about it in case you missed it. There was a survey that was asked of everybody, and we got a tremendous response, and I want to thank you for doing that. And so, Debbie, thank you for joining us today. I know that you have been working hard on this, along with Sarah Benson.
Mm-hmm.
So what started this whole idea of a survey, and why did you do it?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on the show again, Sue. And without your assistance in publicizing the survey and getting the word out there, I think, it really helped to get the kind of response that we did. The main reason that we went ahead and did this survey is because we all know, all of us who've been working with homeowners associations issues for years now, we all know that there are problems, there are issues. And even if you go back and you look at the industry surveys that are done by CAI, at least 10% in their survey say that, you know, they've had a bad experience, and 1 in 4 people have had a dispute with their HOA. And when you extrapolate that out to 70 million numbers, 10% of 70 million is 7 million people at minimum. So what we wanted to do is gauge an interest from, we wanted to see how many people who are out there who are interested in making some sort of changes and addressing some of these issues, and what they thought the issues were, and to what extent they thought they were serious, moderately serious, very serious, or not a problem, so that we can, you know, kind of organize ourselves all around a common cause and figure out what things need to be discussed and tackled first. So that was the main reason why.
And you got a fairly good response.
We got over 300 respondents, and of those respondents, the survey was online. It was done as an online electronic survey, and it was out there live from July 10th through August 29th, so for about 7 weeks. And we posted them on various social media outlets, and it was open to everyone, whether or not they currently own a home in an HOA. It was open to anyone. 92% of our respondents do actually currently own a property in a homeowners association. Some people would be former owners of homeowners associations' home for one reason or another. And we wanted to leave this open not to homeowners, no matter what walk of life they came from. And the interesting thing, Shu, was that half of our respondents work in the real estate industry. So this is not just, homeowners who, had a problem with their HOA for whatever reason, you know, how the industry sometimes likes to portray certain homeowners as troublemakers. You know, so this is not a survey that's being answered by people who have an axe to grind or anything like that. We're talking half of the people actually work in the real estate business, and the other half work in different sectors of different business sectors, everywhere from the media to management to law. And 18% identified themselves as community volunteers, which was also interesting.
So those would be the board members.
Not necessarily board members, because we left it in the survey. We asked them if they were if they had any experience as a volunteer. Not necessarily board members. So that could be any kind of community volunteer, right?
So it could be, but again. All right, I can only speak for my own personal position, but we bought a house, we moved here, we bought a house, and at the settlement table we were told that there was an HOA and it would cost us X number of dollars and they'd pick up our trash and remove the snow. But I never really had anything to do with the HOA. I mean, we sent in our checks and just ignored it for like the first 8 months. So there are people who actually get involved with different functions and different committees and things that go on. They actually put in some time and effort on their part. And those, I guess, are the people who are aware of it. So you've got people who have no idea of what goes on behind closed doors.
Right.
You have people who are on the fringes. You know, they may be chairing the garden part of the garden committee or something like that, or the trash committee or the parking committee, you know, whatever it is. So even they're aware of it. And then you may have actual board members who are trying to make the whole thing go.
Right.
And
but
you have the whole spectrum of people who responded.
That's right, we did. I mean, what we did is we asked the question, do you have 5 or more years of background experience in any of the following? And we listed, you know, several different categories, including real estate sales. And two of the categories were community volunteer and volunteer management. So what I'm saying is, you know, somebody who was the leader of their Girl Scout troop would be a community volunteer. Or they could have been a community volunteer within their community or within their greater, you know, in the city where they live.
Okay.
So these are people who are, what would you say, civic-minded. You know, they would be people who would be interested in making their community a better place. We did not specifically ask them if they were board members.
So they may or may not be knowledgeable about what goes on. So, but that's a great representation.
Yes, it is.
It's a great representation of the type of people who took the time to volunteer.
Right.
Or to take the survey and give you their feedback.
Right. And what we started off with, the first question we did is we came up with a list of 26 different commonly reported issues or complaints in homeowners associations. And we're going to have, I'm going to give you the link to the website where they can download the survey to see all 26 of those topics. I don't know if you want me to read down all of them right now.
No, I can include it in my promo so people can see it.
Right. But, you know, we included things like, you know, voting and election procedures, transparency, apathy, discrimination, power of the board defined, whatever. And out of the 26, items that we listed, we asked them to please rate it as, did they find it to be not a problem, a moderately serious problem, or a very serious problem. So they had three different answers that they could choose for each question. I will tell you that there's a chart that lists, pardon me for a second, there's a chart that puts them in order from the ones that were the least serious to the most serious. And at the least serious end, we have, we asked them if they felt that rental restrictions were too strict. And 22% rated that as a very serious problem. 27% rated that as a moderately serious problem. So you have 49%, almost half of people thought that that was a problem, something that needs to be addressed, and that was the least serious on the scale. At the other end of the spectrum, we had lack of transparency and poor communication, and a whopping 84% of our respondents said that this is a very serious problem in associations.
Wow.
And an additional 11% said that it's a moderately serious problem. So you're looking at 95% of respondents said that that is, you know, in their minds, the top problem that has the most serious consequences. 95, 96? Well, there was rounding. So that is a huge number. People don't know what's going on in their associations. And by the way, in the survey, we had an area where we allowed people to add their additional comments as well. And there were a lot of comments that we had that said, oh, you know, I can't get access to the documents. I don't know what's going on. I didn't know exactly what I was buying into, you know, when I did, and there's no communication coming from my board. So the comments were consistent with what the response was. The next thing that was also serious was apathy and lack of involvement. We had 76% rated that as a very serious problem, and an additional 20% as a moderately serious problem. So it's a very close second to lack of transparency. 96% of people thought that that's a huge issue, and that's not inconsistent with what we've heard from the industry for years. Shu, as you know, one of the biggest complaints that we hear from the folks in the industry is, oh, they can't get anybody to come to the meetings, and it's difficult, to get enough people to make a quorum, and, you know, nobody seems to want to get involved. So it's not really surprising.
Well, the thing is, people get involved in things that mean something to them, and in HOAs, people don't want the HOAs. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take to get it through everybody's thick head that nobody wants these things.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's not something, you know, when people are buying a home, they're not thinking about how are they going to self-govern their community. They're thinking about how are they going to live in the community, how many friends they're going to make, where their children have somebody to play with, where are the schools located, are they good schools, where am I going to put my furniture. The last thing that they're thinking about is how is my HOA going to maintain the roads, or how is my condominium going to set aside enough money for reserves to pay for the roof when that needs to be replaced. It's just not at the top of their minds when they're buying a home. Would you agree?
Well, realtors have a saying that the most important thing about real estate is location, location, location. So if you want to be within walking distance of work or near your school or whatever the location is that you want, that's number one. But beyond that, it's an emotional purchase.
Exactly.
People go in and they fall in love with a couch that's not going to stay. But that's what they fall in love with. And they can imagine themselves sitting on it. And, you know, that's why they buy it. Nobody's kicking the tires. Nobody's understanding the other thing. I mean, now a lot of people say, oh, well, you can't get away from them. They're all over the place. But, guys, it's, you know, you're the consumers. You
right.
need to demand that you get what you want, not just take whatever is given to you and try to live with it.
Well, you know, part of the problem, Sue, is that the way it's presented, you know, by realtors is that it's no big deal. It's just like if you're buying in any other city or town. At least that was our experience when we were buying. You know, it was sort of understood. Oh yeah, there's a homeowners association and there's a fee and it covers A, B, and C. But you know, it's not explained to buyers, and most buyers don't know until after they've lived in one of these communities what exactly that means and what exactly that entails, because now you're owning property in common, which is something that you know, if you're not living in an HOA, there's no common property, there's no common ownership of anything. So you're not owning a building in common, you're not owning an elevator in common, you're not owning the streets in common if you're just buying, you know, your little starter home that's somewhere that's not in an HOA. And, you know, a couple of people have said to me, well, don't you evaluate the city or the, you know, the town where you're going to be living before you live there? Well, yes, but all of that information is open and transparent and open to the public. You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to beg for it. It's all out in the open.
And it's not personal. Unlike an HOA, it doesn't
get
personal.
Exactly.
There's a, you know, arm's length distance between whoever's running the county or the city or the state or what, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is. They may or may not know you. In an HOA, they know you. It's very, very personal.
Exactly, and you know, you have, let's say you have 100 people in a condominium building, and you know, the roof is leaking, and you know, if this is a condominium, the people who are up on the top floor, of course, are going to be most affected by a roof leak. If you're down on the third floor, and it's a 20-story building, you're not really going to care that much about that the roof is leaking upstairs.
It doesn't affect me. What's in it for
it
me?
It doesn't affect you, you know. So when it comes around time, you know, to decide what's going to be done about the roof, you know, the board could do one of two things. They could go ahead and say, well, we're going to do the roof and we're going to pass the special assessment because there's not enough money saved aside and reserved. And then everybody on the other floors is going to say, well, why don't you just, you know, patch that area to give us a few more years to come up with the money, or they might not have the money. So, you know, you have a different people with different priorities, and they're all trying to decide how to spend this pool of money, but really the only people who have control over that pool of money is the board of directors. And that's, you know, that's where transparency comes in. If you don't know what's going on, and if there's board meetings going on and they might be discussing the problems with the roof 6 months or a year before they decide to issue this special assessment, but unless you're going to the meeting or unless that information is being passed along to all the owners, you're not going to know about it. So you can't even, you know, have a couple of months advance notice to start preparing for the inevitable.
The whole thing, too, especially with something like a condominium, where it's sold as carefree living.
Yeah.
And
that's a laugh.
The idea is that somebody else is going to take care of it. So why would you go to meetings? Why would you do anything? That's not what you agreed to. You agreed to let someone else handle it.
And even when I lived in a planned community for a couple years, and it was the same thing, you know, well, they're going to take care of the parks and in the mowing the common areas and, you know, the gated security and all that. So, you know, we don't have to worry about that. And really, you know, if you're living outside of an HOA in any town in America, most people don't concern themselves with, you know, whether or not there's police protection set up or if the roads will be plowed. Or the only time people get involved, of course, is if the government failed in one of those areas, or, you know, if you had a police misconduct or something. Then people get all up in arms about it. But if you go to any city or county meeting, there's not going to be very many people there.
No.
And it's the same thing in an HOA. And people don't see that there's a difference because, you know, now you have common ownership of it, as opposed to if you're not in an HOA, you don't own those components, so you don't have to directly pay for it, although you are paying in your taxes, but it's spread out over a larger number of people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a big chunk. It's not, hey, you owe us $100,000 tomorrow. So, any surprises in the survey? Is it pretty much what you expected to get?
A lot of it is what we expected. One surprise is that we did ask for, in the survey, we did ask for people to provide us with some contact information. We made that voluntary. Well, 80% of the people actually did provide us with their name and contact information, which, of course, we're going to keep confidential. But, that was kind of surprising. You know, we thought at first, well, there would be a lot of people that would want to take this survey and remain anonymous. But the fact that they have provided their contact information tells us that, you know, there are people that are interested and concerned, and they want to be kept informed, not only of the results of the survey, but, you know, of any other information that we have going forward. We were talking before how the money is being spent, the power, how boards can turn around and issue special assessments. And then if you don't pay them, you could be threatened with a lien on your home and possibly foreclosure. Well, two of the big things that came up on the survey were we asked folks if they felt there was a problem with their HOA board's power to fine and their board's power to foreclose. And really, not very surprisingly, Shu, we had 76% of folks said that the power of the board to fine is a very serious problem, and another 17% called it a moderately serious problem. So that's 93%. 93% of our respondents said that that's a problem, that the board has the power to fine. And another 89% said that it's a problem that the board has the power to foreclose. And that doesn't really surprise me, because when we were looking at some of the comments that folks left, they mentioned situations where the board was not, they were coming up with these rules and maybe they weren't applying them consistently, which was another thing that came up on our survey. And basically, they were abusing their power. A couple of our respondents told us about they felt like they were being bullied. They were being forced into paying money for these fines that they felt that were unjustified. But if they didn't do that, they were going to have a lien placed on their property and could possibly even lose their property. So in order not to happen, then, of course, they end up having to pay the fine.
So they were paying under duress. They were afraid of what would happen to them if they didn't pay.
Exactly.
Did you get a sense that maybe people felt they were being fined unjustly?
From the comments, I did get that sense. You know, they were saying things that, there's these rules, but they're not necessarily being enforced consistently. We asked them, are restrictions and rules not consistently enforced? And 91% said, yes, that's a problem. If your neighbor leaves their garbage can out too long, maybe it's not an issue, but if you do it, and then maybe they bother you about it, or the grass in your yard might be brown, or the tree might not be trimmed properly, kind of minor issues. And if they're not, it's also, the other problem was that we asked if people felt that there were unreasonable limitations or limitations on residents' rights in HOAs, and 88% said yes, they believe that there are unreasonable limitations on residents' rights in HOAs, 68% of them rating that as a very serious problem and 20% as a moderately serious problem. So you're starting off, and when you put all these together as a pattern, Shu, you're starting off with rules that people think are unreasonable to begin with, silly, kind of minor issues, and then you combine that with the power of a board of directors, whether it be developer-controlled or homeowner-controlled, to enforce those rules with fines and to threaten putting a lien on your house and maybe even foreclosing on your house. I mean, you know, look at the big picture. Of course there's going to be a possibility for abuse, especially if you're starting off with rules that are kind of unreasonable to begin with.
I got an email today and talking about unreasonable. A son goes to visit his mother. Mm-hmm. The board does not like his car. Mm-hmm. The mother is fined every time the son goes to visit his mother. His mother is fined because they don't like the car. So the son bought a new car.
Boy.
Just so that he could go and visit his mother. They found other reasons to fine her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I hear stories like that, when I hear from people or read their emails, I just get so angry.
Yeah.
Because that is absolutely obnoxious. I mean, to have the power to decide they don't like your car.
And the thing is that the rules are sometimes a moving target, Shu. In some of the comments that we had and in some other people that I've communicated with, you know, they'll have a rule that says for example, the flag. This is one that comes up all the time. There's a federal law that says that an HOA can't tell you that you can't have an American flag.
Right.
But the HOA can still govern rules, reasonable rules, and how do you figure out what's reasonable? Reasonable rules over how and when you can display that flag. So, for example, you can have a flag, but you can't have a flag pole. You know, so somebody will go out and they'll put up they bought a house, they put up a flag pole. I just read this in the news the other day. They put up a flag pole, they put their flag on it, and right away the HOA came out and said to them, well, you can't do that. And he says, but the law says that I can put up a flag. They says, well, you can, but you can't have the flag pole. You know, so they wanted him to take out the flag pole and put the flag up on one of those things that hangs off of your porch, instead of having it on a flagpole. And I mean, those are just the kind of rules that you sit there and you scratch your head.
Well, the thing is, you know, people have put their flags on posts, not a pole, but a post that's attached to the house. Oh, mm-hmm. You can't attach anything to the house because now you've changed you've changed the front of the house, so you can't do that. You know, it's just, and think of poor Billy Martin, who put a flag in his flower pot, and it was an unapproved object in the flower pot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they'll come up with just about anything that's idiotic.
And that was a case, Shu, where, you know, the rule first said you couldn't because it was a condominium situation, and in a condominium you don't own the outside of your house, so they didn't want it attached to the outside of the house. So then they turned around and you know, once it ended up in his flower pot, then they turned around and made another rule that said, oh, well, now you can't put anything in your flower pot that's an unauthorized object.
Yeah.
So they were considering this little tiny flag, you know, the kind that you give to kids to wave at a parade,
mm-hmm.
as an unauthorized object because it was in his flower pot.
Right.
So, you know, really these results don't surprise me. I mean, what surprised me is that the high percentages. I thought there were going to be, you know, a majority of people that found things, certain things, as serious or very serious problems. But the extent, I mean, the numbers are staggering, 90%, 90% on some of these issues. Just, it was even kind of worse than I thought it would be on some of these issues. Another one that came up, Shu, that we often hear about is discrimination. We asked, did people feel that there was discrimination against owners, and if they thought that was a problem. And 68% rated that as very serious, 18% rated that as moderately serious. So you're talking about 86% of people thought that discrimination was a problem, discrimination against owners.
What kind of discrimination? Because there's a lot of different ways you can discriminate based on, you know, religion, familial status, race, handicap, age. Is it all-encompassing?
It's all-encompassing. The way that we just put on there on the survey, we just listed, you know, discrimination against owners as something that we asked them to rate. We also asked them to rate if they thought theft and embezzlement was a problem, major repair, major maintenance of infrastructure, construction defects. So we kind of ran the gambit and wanted to get a general idea of what they thought was a problem and to what extent. Those are definitely good follow-up questions to ask in a future survey, Shu, to be a little bit more specific as to what type of discrimination. But we wanted to get an overall sense for where the major problems lie, and then it gives us some sort of a direction in the future to know where we need to ask more questions and get more detail. We wanted to keep the survey relatively simple and short so that it wouldn't intimidate people or discourage them from participating.
Well, I think when I wanted to go on the discrimination, I wanted to sort of touch on the general categories,
mm-hmm.
that are protected under fair housing. Mm-hmm. But I also wondered how much of it was personal discrimination. In other words, you know, we can both be the same age, the same color, the same, you know, socioeconomic group. Everything can be the same, roughly the same income, same number of kids. But is the discrimination against one because they don't like that one person?
Oh, yeah, because of a popularity contest. You know?
Absolutely.
Right.
Is it because, hey, you're in the wrong place, we don't like you,
mm-hmm.
like this guy's car, they don't like his car.
Right.
I mean, we've had stupid stuff like that before where the same identical truck,
mm-hmm.
was parked next door, same color, same everything. One was a Lexus, one, and, you know, it was made by the same company, one was a little more upscale. And the one that was not as upscale was, they were told that they couldn't have it because it just brought down property values.
It's just crazy.
I mean, it's not crazy, Debbie. It's incredibly ignorant and stupid.
Yeah. I mean, why in the world should your neighbor care what kind of vehicle that you're driving?
But there was a picture of these two trucks. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, they were even the same color. They were the same size. They looked
so you have like to that. You have to wonder then what is, you know, it's not about the truck. I mean, the truck is just the rule about the truck and what the truck looks like is just on the surface. It's more about the person who's in power doesn't like the other person for whatever reason, so they're going to use the rule.
What rule?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how'd you come up with a rule for that?
I don't know, but you know, as you know, boards have a fairly wide level of authority to go in and make rules, so long as they relate back to the covenants and restrictions.
To the common areas, they cannot make rules pertaining to the private property. They can make rules pertaining to the common area,
right.
And that is, I think that's reasonable. I don't have a problem with that. So if you decide you're going to set up a campground in the middle of the street, then they can decide that that's not a good idea.
Right.
And they can prevent you. But to come in and make rules based on what kind of car you can drive, since when?
Yeah. That seems to be more of a problem when you have condominium and villa situations where the association owns your driveway, so to speak. You know, they own your front porch. You have a limited use to it, of course, because you live there. But, you know, that it becomes more of a problem. But it even starts to bleed over into homeowners associations where you have deeded lots. I just read a story the other day that I posted on my blog where a couple hung up a piece of wrought iron, decorative wrought iron work on their front porch. And the HOA doesn't like that because they have architectural guidelines and rules. That's how they get around it in an HOA that says, you know, your house has to have a certain look. So anything that you hang on your porch or, you know, plant in your yard, that's a material change to the look of the outside of your house, and it has to be approved by the Architectural Control Committee. And so they're saying, well, we don't like that piece of artwork that's hanging up on your front porch. And they're fining the owner over something that, frankly, looks quite nice, you know, looking at the pictures of it. And the reason is why. I mean, how is that harming anybody? Obviously, it's not. And why doesn't the owner have the freedom to self-expression to put whatever they want on their front porch?
Because that's going to devalue property, you see. If you don't look and march to the, look exactly alike, wear the same things, march to the same drummer, then you're going to devalue property because we can't have people thinking for themselves. We cannot have any original thoughts. That is a tragedy.
It is. It is.
That
That's
is
why
terrible.
I really enjoyed when Nancy Henschel came on your show a few weeks ago and spoke about the dinosaurs, the roving dinosaur statues. I thought that was terrific.
Well, I heard from people in Houston, not in her neighborhood, but I heard from people, they're sitting there and apparently there go these two trucks with these two dinosaurs down the road.
Yeah.
So they're moving. They're going all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think what she did was brilliant. And I love the fact that it's doing some real good.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are actually donating money to charities to host
right.
these things. You know, what fun. What fun, and what a way to thumb your nose at the HOA.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think, you know, if more people would take actions like that and not take things so seriously, maybe there'd be some easing up on all of this perception of this obsession with property values and you know, conformity, whatever you want to call it.
You know, there's, what, $70 billion involved.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are using the $70 billion, who are making $70 billion off this, are not going to be easing up anywhere anytime soon.
Right.
Unless they are forced to do that. And the only way they're going to be forced to do that, because let's face it, our legislators aren't doing a damn thing to protect us. In fact, in fact, they're throwing us under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Every time one of these little penny-ante lobbyists goes there with a wish list, you know, they'll sponsor their bills.
Well, that's how HOA boards got the power to fine.
Exactly.
I mean, because it wasn't like that in the early days with HOAs, right?
No. Oh, no. No. You did not have the power. I mean, nobody thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth would you give, you know, Joe Blow down the street the power to fine and foreclose and take your house away from you?
Mm-hmm. You know, and that, I think, was driven mostly by property managers, community association managers, because that's different than property managers, because possibly by boards, but I think it was more driven by community association managers, because they're saying, well, how are we going to get these folks to comply, because just asking them to do it, you know, it's not really cutting it. So we need to find some other way to get them to comply. And rather than come up with positive reinforcement that encourages people to take care of their property, you know, they turned it around on its heels and said, okay, well, now we're going to issue a fine. And, you know, that should stop people from misbehaving. But the problem is, you know, if you're applying it to such silly rules as what you can hang up for your holiday decorations, or, you know, when you have to bring your garbage can back into the garage, it just gets insane. So
one of the big issues in HOAs is embezzlement.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been tons of stories with millions, literally millions of dollars embezzled. That's what we know. I mean, you can see you have 100 people and they're paying $1 each a month, and so you expect to have $100 in the kitty. And when you've only got $80 in the kitty, you know that $20 has taken a walk. So you can kind of follow that. If the manager decides the manager needs some money because the manager wants to build something or buy something or go someplace or do something and doesn't have enough money, and he starts fining people, and as we talked about at the top of the hour, people pay up because they're afraid of what would happen to them if
right.
they don't pay.
Right.
Is there any way for the HOA to know that 10% of their members have been fined for a total of $10,000, $20,000?
Right.
Where is that money? Where is that money going? I mean, there's no way of tracking this. I mean, there's a huge, huge opportunity here to just fleece people with no tracking ability whatsoever.
It's supposed to be in the annual report. Really, when they're pulling in fines, that should be considered revenue.
Well,
the HOA.
Some associations actually use that as income. They plan on collecting X number of dollars in fines. But you're not, the board's not sitting there collecting the fines or issuing the fines. You don't know what fines are coming in, where it's going, or what's happening.
Oh, no, because all that remains confidential. You don't know which ones of your neighbors are being fined unless
even the board doesn't know. If you have a manager that's handling the daily routine of the association, it's the manager who issues the fines, the manager who collects the fines. Do you think if they're going to be embezzling money that we can track, do you think they're not going to embezzle money that cannot be tracked?
That's a very good point. And by the way, this was one of the issues that we asked on our survey. 52% rated theft and embezzlement as a very serious issue, and an additional 26% as moderately serious. So we're talking, there's a lot of concern about how the money is being spent, what's going on. There's no transparency. People don't know what's up. And the other big issue is that people are concerned about their rights being trampled on. And another one that I want to get to, Shu, before we get too far along, is we asked people if they thought that it was a problem that there's not enough non-HOA options when you go to buy a house. 84% of respondents said that there's at least a moderate problem with not enough non-HOA options for buyers, and 64% of those rated that as a very serious problem. Only 16% said that's not a problem for them. Only 16%. So, you know, when you go to try to buy a house, as you know and I know, it's very difficult to find something that's not part of a homeowners association these days. And we also asked people to describe their philosophy about HOAs.
Yeah.
And we gave them three options. One was HOAs need to be significantly reformed. One was HOAs need to be abolished or phased out of existence. Another one was most HOAs are okay, but tweaking laws could make them function more efficiently. And then we had a category for other. 49% responded that HOAs need to be significantly reformed, and an additional 25% think that HOAs should be abolished or phased out of existence. Only 15% rated said that they just need some minor tweaking, and the other 11% were in the other category.
I'm surprised that only 25% said they need to be abolished, and I think that the industry, considering all of the issues and the problems, and I don't know how many people have thought through how easy it is to tweak or fix the problems that they're having a big problem with. If the number one problem is the lack of transparency and the lack of communication, how are you going to change that? You know, you can enact all the laws that you want, saying that HOA, you have to be transparent. You have to provide that. I mean, in my governing documents, there are no categories where I cannot see. I mean, my contract gives me the right to look at to inspect all of the association documents. There's nothing that can be withheld.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the laws change that a little bit, but again, who's going to enforce it? I mean, unless you go to court.
Right.
Who's going to enforce it? So
well,
do you want to spend all your time in court?
Well, I'll tell you what I've noticed that's going on in Florida. Florida has laws for both the HOA Act and condominiums and cooperatives. And, you know, it says that all official governing documents, all official records, are open to inspection by the owners with the exception of anything that would be personnel-related or attorney-client privilege. You know, that's only a very, very small percentage of things that wouldn't be open to inspection. But in practice, when you go to request that information, you know, you hear all the time that people can't get access to the records. You know, the manager or the board, if there's no manager, drags their feet. They don't want to provide the information. They'll ignore requests. Often what people have to do is they have to send the request in writing with return receipt or some sort of delivery confirmation in order to get any kind of a response at all. And then when you get the documentation that you're asking for, it may not contain all of the information you're looking for, if you get it at all. And who do you call? There's no one to call. I mean, in, you know, technically in Florida, you can go to the Division of Business and Professional Regulation, if you're a condo or condominium owner, and file a complaint about that, that you haven't received your documentation. But it's not as though anybody is going to turn around and, you know, is that a judge is going to turn around and say to the HOA or the management company, okay, here's an injunction, now you must produce this information by such and such a date. It just doesn't work that way. And there's filing fees. Even if you're going through one of these organizations, as you know, Shu, there's still filing fees involved, and the HOA can ignore it, and then you end up in court just to see documents that you have a right to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're in an HOA, you don't even have that level of support, and that's the way it is in most states, too. There are no regulatory agencies.
Well, even when you have one, I mean, Virginia has an ombudsman, and the only thing the ombudsman is allowed to do is to tell you that she's not allowed to tell you anything.
Right.
And, I mean, for that, we're paying her?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You know, I mean, the whole thing has got to the point where it's just such a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be able to blog for centuries to come and never get to the bottom of all the issues. But before we run out of time, Debbie, I know that you have a blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to give us the URL, the link to your blog, so that people can check it out.
Okay. It's independentamericancommunities.com. All one word, independentamericancommunities.com.
And independentamericancommunities.com. Communities with a plural, right?
Not right.
Okay.
Right.
.com. And you've had that for how long?
I've had it for about a year, but I've been contributing to it in earnest for maybe the last 6 months.
And what kind of response are you getting?
I'm getting an increasing number of readers and followers. And when I publish the blogs, I automatically put them out on my Facebook feed and my Twitter feed and LinkedIn. And I've also published something separately on LinkedIn, and I'm getting more responses and people sending me private messages and email messages, and so I'm encouraged that people are reading them. I kind of look at it on a global perspective, Shu, looking at communities and how they relate back to the local government, and even up to the federal housing policy, how all of these things interplay with one another.
Okay, do we have a link for the survey results yet or not? Not yet.
It should be going up sometime this week or by the end of today. And it's chppi.org, www.chppi.org. And that stands for Coalition for Community Housing Policy in the Public Interest.
And who has hosted?
This is hosted by Sarah Benson she owns Association Evaluation. She's been on your show before.
Right.
And Sarah is a real estate broker for a very long time. And so we've created this new website and organization called the Community Housing A Coalition for Community Housing Policy in the Public Interest. And if you go there on the website, on the homepage, there'll be a link to the survey results, and then you can download a copy in PDF or view it online.
Thank you so very much, Debbie. Would you believe we're out of time?
Well, time flies when you're having fun, right, Shu?
I know. It really does. You sit here and I'm always amazed. But thank you so much for coming on. I really hope that we do another survey because I like to hear from people.
Yeah, the more information that we can get to understand what's going on, I think the better.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.